Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, helping you jumpstart your career in financial services. As always, I'm bringing to you fresh ideas from a recently aired video on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Do me a favor, my friend, and text me at 214-699-7599 with any questions you might have from this show so I can help you along your journey in becoming a successful financial professional. Again, that number is 214-699-7599. All right, let's hop into today's topic. Hey, everybody, Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, bringing you yet another Conversations in Finance. And today, my guest was Jackie Campbell, such an exemplary model of perseverance and determination, having such a storied career in financial services. And I wanted to bring her on to really talk about some of the advice she would give to career changers and new industry entrants based on everything she's gone through, having worked for one of the largest financial institutions in the world. She had some really great perspective, but we always start with the money story, and here's Jackie's.
Absolutely. It was funny. I feel like I got into this industry a little bit on purpose and a little bit by accident. The on purpose piece started back in high school. I actually was really privileged to be part of a high school co-op program. And okay. During my senior year of high school, I got to spend the second half of my day interning, if you will, at an organization. And it happened to be where I interviewed and was accepted a role at a bank my senior year of high school. So I happened to be 16 years old, running around in a suit, as a co-op student. And again, my job was simply to answer the phones, file paperwork. But what I learned during that experience, because I happened to be in the trust department, was I had a chance to, when I'm filing these paperwork, these were trust documents. So I started asking questions like, what does a trust mean? Or, what do they mean by titling these accounts or this real estate or these portfolios in their trust? And so that, my friend, was really the start of how I guess you could say, entered into the industry. Early 90s in Detroit, Michigan. And what I love is like these programs were being offered to students of color. And so, you mentioned awakening and grandma. It's funny. I had no clue what a trust was. Yeah. One day I'm filing this particular trust document and I'm looking down and it had the name of the trust and it had the address of the trust. And the address was my deceased grandmother's address. And I'm like, okay, this doesn't make sense. Here I am, I know this is my grandmother's address, but it's somebody else's name on that document. And so, moral of the story, I went and asked one of the trust officers, how is it that my grandmother's address is on the document? Well, it was because when my grandmother passed away, her real estate was sold to an auction. Trust. It was sold to a trust. Someone else bought it in their trust, and now my grandmother's legacy is now in somebody else's. But what I learned at 16 was, well, wait a minute, I didn't inherit that as the grandchild. Well, unfortunately, these were just things that we didn't know about. We just put grandmama's house up for sale. Somebody with a trust purchased it, and now that became part of their investment portfolio. So just a couple of, different, that was like, okay, I need to learn more about how this works. How do we, get access to that legacy and not somebody else?
Next, I asked Jackie about the significance and the importance of such an early exposure to the financial services industry and what impact that had on her financial legacy with her own family. Here's what she had to say.
Absolutely. I thought about it and I'm like, when somebody passes away, it shouldn't be that our financial situation gets worse. It should be that our financial situation gets better. Many of us who have followed magazines like Black Enterprise and others, there's declarations that we make and we talk about, providing an inheritance to our children's children. And when we understand and unpack what that means, it's, we all know that our, day will come where we'll transition to greater, as I like to say it. During that transition, I always tease my family. I say I'm worth more dead than alive because I've set it up so that upon my passing, my family should not be in a different or difficult or worse financial, you know, it's already going to be bad enough that I'm gone, my income is gone, etc. Yeah. But we have a responsibility. So in that moment of me seeing grandma's, what could have been our, say, property, our legacy, was no longer, because we did not have the education as to perhaps how to set up trust, life insurance, things like that.
Yeah. So, simple things, right?
Next, we talked about Jackie's early path going through the financial services industry, and you might be surprised about how she got started. Even if you don't meet all the qualifications, you should still try, and here's why.
I decided to ask to be promoted to a full-time role and do kind of community college in the evenings, because I was really intrigued by this now banking industry. So I became a teller, a branch manager, and then one day my branch closed down. It was being consolidated. And so they said, well, you can either, you know, apply for another job, or, you know, unfortunately, you know, we may have to let you go. So I saw an opportunity to be a registered sales assistant for the investment side of the business. And I looked at the qualifications, and here's something I want to point out. I probably only met 50% of the qualifications that I saw on the, you know, on the sheet. Just back in the day, it was like, you know, career mobility papers that would kind of float around. And I only meet about 50%, but I'm going to still apply. And I applied, I got the interview, and I got the job. So I want to encourage people that even if you don't meet all the qualifications, especially women, we tend to like want to meet all of it, or we don't apply. I didn't have a Series 7. I didn't have a Series 65. I didn't have it, but I said, you know what? I can get it.
Yeah.
And so I applied and got the job.
Now, Jackie's never been one afraid of hustle. So if you're not afraid of hustle and you're looking for an apprenticeship, an internship, or a mentorship, she's got some words of wisdom for you. Check this out.
I mean, I had one young lady recently who reached out to me and said, I would love to apprentice under you for 90 days just to, you know, have a great mentorship experience, but also to learn about how to be successful as a Black woman in this business. And so I was like, wow, right? I looked at that as very, you know, I was very impressed, number one. And number two, if this is an opportunity for us, it's a win-win the way I look at it, right?
Absolutely.
I'm able to get some free help. We all love some free help.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm able to pour into a young sister of color and show her as much as I can within that period of time. I mean, it's something that we need to do more of, absolutely.
Since I'm asked so much about which direction should I go, I wanted to ask Jackie, since she had the choice between all the different channels, why she settled in on the banking channel, and the importance of settling in on something that really fits you, especially as a new entrant to the industry.
You know, I did shop around to, you know, look at different wirehouses, independent shops, etc. But, you know, Bank One at the time to me just felt like the right fit, because, you know, I didn't come from money. So I didn't have a, you know, a family of rich people to go to. And
a network.
A network for their wealth. You know, I mean, I was living at the time on the south side of Chicago in Chatham. So, you know, I didn't have like a bunch of neighbors with a whole lot of money. So, you know, I had to go where I had a natural market of being able to just help clients see the value of working with me by way of deepening existing relationships. And it was a really great way to start my retail side of my profession. You know, I do think it's really, you know, all about understanding where you're trying to take your career. You know what I mean? Like really having that real self assessment of, all right, how do I want to build my career? And then if I'm in this business long term, which is, you know, fill in the blank, 10, 15, 20 years plus, where's the best place for me to build and sustain a very successful practice? And it is about going through that exercise.
Along those same lines, I wanted her to provide you with some tips, some really tangible things that you can be doing in order to find a fit within the industry. Here's what she had to say.
Exactly. Well, you know, first things first, you got to know yourself. And when I say that, you know, you got to know, can you operate independently or do you need structure? You know, where are you most successful? Some people need to know that they have to show up at an office every day at 8 o'clock, you know, be held accountable to a team, to a manager, you know, really get their check the boxes done and then leave at 5 o'clock. And for some people, that type of structure and discipline has awarded them a really successful practice. Others, they're more successful being more fluid. You know, maybe working virtually, like you and I, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's where they get their creative juices and that's where they're able to thrive. So it is really about knowing yourself, because say one program, like the bank program, is going to be more of that structured kind of platform that we just described, where, you know, your independent program is going to be maybe a little bit more fluid. So you gotta know like where you feel like you operate and vibe the most. I would say number two, culture is key. So I would absolutely say culture is key. You know, I've worked in many different cultures. I've even worked in multiple cultures within a culture, if that makes sense. And so, you know, working at big firms like the one I just, you know, worked at with JP Morgan, you know, you may have multiple cultures within a culture. But you do have to know what culturally is important to you and how you want to build your practice. And does that firm, you know, really mirror those cultural values and those values that you stand
for? You're preaching.
Culture is key.
And well, because I tell people all the time, I'm like, you're never going to get past the ceiling of what your own beliefs are about something if the place you're spending 8, 9, 10 hours a day doesn't believe in the same thing.
Right.
And that's not to say you're going to find a perfect fit, but there got to be some non-negotiables. I mean, if you don't believe in selling, you know, let's say fixed annuities, then don't go to somewhere where that's all they do.
Don't do that. Exactly. So that's exactly, you know, don't go in and try, because that's what we'll try to press our agenda on, an agenda that might be 300 years old. And so, you know, so definitely know the culture, know yourself. And I would definitely say the other thing that I would be thinking about is, again, clients. If I can give you like three C's, I guess. You know, really know yourself, and there's no C there, culture, and then clients. How do you plan to get business? How do you plan to truly, and like really understanding that process? And if you have a natural market, excellent. If you have a niche market that you want to focus on, excellent. If you're in a circle of attorneys and different COIs, or you sit on boards of very well-established nonprofits, there could be that, you know, but understand, how are you putting cheeks in the seat, as we like to say? You know, how do you plan for this model to work, and for, and does it help you reach your goals for your practice? And so I'm always asking, how I would ask anybody that I would recruit, how do you plan to get business? How do you get business today? Are you happy with that method? Has that worked for you? And what would you do differently if you could see, you know, if you wanted to see that improve? So that's really something that will then help you determine, all right, is a captive versus an independent versus a bank channel, which one makes the most sense?
Hey, Dominique here, and I hope you are really enjoying this week's episode. Look, if you're a current or aspiring financial professional and you'd like to join a community of like-minded individuals that I'm sharing my 20 plus years of experience with, make sure you visit my website at www.djh-capital.com for more information. Now back to this week's episode. Now, if you're not good at sales like the industry normally harps on, straight from Jackie's mouth, this is what you need and want to do to get ahead.
I love that you brought up transferable skills and skills, because I think, you know, as we are considering D&I and diversity and inclusion in this industry, a lot of what we're looking at is, how can we take people with transferable skills? Again, remember, I only have 50% of that job that I ended up getting, and I was able to then get the other skills by being hands-on in the environment once I got there.
But yeah, not to mention, you're talking about in the 90s in a male-dominated industry, and you are a Black female.
It was unheard of. I was like the only one running around the floor. And like, how did I mean, it was just, but for me, it was so funny. Even though I was one of the only ones running around on the floor, I didn't feel like I didn't belong. That's another key point. I felt like when I got that job, that was my confirmation that I belonged in the room. So, you know, I took full advantage of that opportunity to, in that room that I first got that first job with, you know, transferable skills, the advisors I supported probably had a book of about $15 to $20 million that they collectively managed in revenues. Okay. In revenues. I'm saying there was $20 million that they made in income.
Yeah, for that group. That's a big book.
That's a big book. And so I had a chance to see things and hear conversations and go on deals, but I took it. I mean, I never missed an opportunity to sit on a client call to understand how they were getting from, you know, this client who might have, you know, X number of millions at a competitor and how they got that client to see value and bringing that relationship to them. So to your point, it is about you, right? The client ultimately trusts the brand, but they ultimately are trusting you that. So I got a chance to see the different personality styles and mixes and how to work with certain clients, whether it be business owners or, you know, some of our senior clients that needed to focus on estate transfer. So it's just soak it in. I think just that was the biggest piece is we all have the transferable skills.
I have a lot of conversations with people that are uncomfortable with the word sales when it comes to financial services. But I love the definition that Jackie gives of sales. Check this out.
I almost want to say we're not really selling anything. We're providing a solution. Typically, customers come to us because they might have either a goal or a problem in their financial situation. Right. They either have a goal that they want to reach or a problem. Yeah. And we're there to help solve that problem. We're there to produce a plan that says, all right, based on your goals, dreams, and priorities, Dominique, we want to make sure that we keep you on track or get you on track. That typically means one of a few things. We either need to save more money, reduce our expenses, enhance our investment portfolio, or put our goals off a little bit longer. That's typically what it means. Yeah. But in order for us to do that, we need to be able to work together. And part of working together is me being able to look at solutions, right? Different products and solutions to help make sure that you can reach those goals so we can hit those concerns. So I try to tell my young adults that worry about it being salesy, you're solving problems. You are a solution to the problem, as T.D. Jakes would say.
Now, as you can imagine, she's very busy. But she does have time to field calls from career changers asking about advice about how to get into the industry, mentorship possibilities, and this is how one of those calls usually goes.
I get a lot of career changers that approach me that are mid-career and, you know, might want to do this as either their final destination, if you will, or, you know, whatever that might be. So my advice is, you know, I always ask them why. Do they want to do this, right? I want to know the why first, right?
If you're money motivated, you're in the wrong career.
Because our industry, we already know, is already plagued with bad apples who got into the industry for the wrong reason. And we, you know, this is a very, very, this field requires a lot of trust. And a lot of trust. I mean, you cannot be successful in this career if you don't have the trust of the person who is handing you over their wallet and saying, I'm trusting you to help me get to that you know, destination. I always ask them why they're doing it. And then depending on that answer, I either end the conversation, tell them to go back, come back to me later when they get it figured out, or all right, so I see that you know, you're doing this for the right reasons. Then I say, okay, like at the end of the day, we talk about the various types of ways that they can enter in. You know, yeah. I really want to go the insurance route, the financial planning route, the asset management route. So once we figure out which route is most suitable for them, I'm like, my girlfriends call me the divine connector. I start picking up the phone I'm like, all right, if I see somebody, if I know you want to do asset management, I'm calling my buddies over in the private bank and I'm getting you an interview so you can start having exploratory conversations. Yeah. If I see that you want to go to CFP route, I'm calling my host of CFP friends and I'm saying, hey, talk to them about that process so that you can have some mentors. So I'm already starting to set up this person with a team of mentors, because if they're ready, we want to make sure that out the gate, they are supported, because many of us didn't have that support. We were kind of on that island by ourselves.
Yeah.
So if that person is coming to me saying, I want to enter into the wonderful field of finance, this is why we have you, me, Quad A, other organizations to be able to surround them with support so they are successful out the gate.
Now, Jackie just left a position at JPMorgan Chase where she was in some very high-level conversations about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And what I wanted her to tell us, having had a seat at the table, is how are firms like JPMorgan dealing with this problem of diversity, equity, and inclusion in today's financial services industry? What are they doing about recruitment, and what are they doing about retention? Here's what she had to say.
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing is recognizing that we do have a real opportunity in the industry to increase the number of diversity, minorities, blacks in the wealth management business. So it's one thing to really say we looked at the numbers and we see a glaring opportunity to increase representation in this very important field.
Why are banks? Because I agree with you. Why are banks having that aha moment now? It seems, and when I say now, in the last 5 to 7 years.
You know, where, and again, I'll say in my opinion as you know, as an expert in this space, what we did was we did a lot of studies. And one of the studies that I did actually personally was we went back to the financial crisis, that took place 2008-2009, like that period of time. That period of time really, put a lot of people sort of out of business. I managed, areas like the South Side of Chicago, in Detroit proper, and because how the business was impacted during that time, and maybe type of solutions that were available or no longer available today. And as I mentioned earlier, some of these areas were going more upstream with the type of client that can get access to an advisor. So that shifted a lot of people of color, if you will, that might have been in some of those areas working with some of those clients. It may have shifted them out of the business. So now it's about going back and figuring out how to re-recruit that amazing talent. How, because we did go through a major crisis that, really took a dip of financial professionals, period, of coming, Think about it. If I was a parent back then telling my kid to go to school, they would not have been to go to the financial services industry.
No.
Because it looked scary. I'm going to tell them go into engineering or STEM or science but definitely the financial services industry was not necessarily what our culture was pushing. Yeah. So we lost that really beautiful pool of talent. So now it's about saying this is a career of choice and how do we continue to market that to our young professionals? I like to say, one of the things I used to say at my previous firm was we got to definitely deal with the interior, the core, before we can really attract, the exterior. It's almost like you attract who you are, right?
Sure.
And so we have to deal with the inside, that retention piece, the internal organization needs to be very healthy. And what I mean by healthy is having programs for individuals to grow their practice, to make sure that they are being supported with resources so that their practice is growing at the same clip as their colleagues, right? Being able to produce different products that allow them to remain competitive and still be able to make a very good living. You know, being able to include them in certain events and conferences so that they get exposure, so that they can have more opportunities for more clients to see them as an advisor of choice. So those are things that, you know, in my opinion, firms need to be very focused on as it relates to retaining key employees.
I had such a good time with Jackie on this one. If you want to see more of these conversations in finance, make sure you check out this video right here. If you enjoyed this one, please like it, subscribe to the channel. Would love to hear what you think. Leave a comment down below. If you want to connect with Jackie, I have her links to social media down below also in the show notes. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye for now. Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend. It would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.